Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to supporting our nation's first responders and veterans, heroes who put their lives on the line for our communities and our country. Heroes like U.S. Army Major Jonathan Turnbull. Major Turnbull sustained devastating injuries at the hands of an ISIS suicide bomber. The complete loss of his left eye, a puncture to his right eye, he needed more than 20 surgeries and countless hours of rehabilitation. Tunnel to Towers paid off his mortgage and gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his needs. He moves around his home more easily now. His home also gives him hope. With help from people like you, the foundation supports families like the Turnbulls. Join Tunnel to Towers in supporting America's heroes, our nation's catastrophically injured veterans and first responders, homeless veterans, Gold Star families, and the families of fallen first responders. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, team, welcome to the Buck Sexton Show. On this episode, Jack Posobiec. Jack Posobiec. How do we even describe the man known and beloved by so many as Poso? He is a senior editor at HumanEvents.com, a veteran Navy intel officer, a man who loves his Catholicism and his Polishness, and also a podcast host and general man about town. Mr. Posobiec, good to have you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate the intro. And the only thing I would add is that I am but a humble purveyor of cheap, affordable, and yet quality rest to all those travelers weary from scrolling the internets. Yes, I am your humble merchant.
Wow, he's doing a pillow poso right now. Look at this pillow poso. I know the moves. I know all the moves, Poso. You know who else knows the moves?
I learned it from you.
And you know who else knows the moves these days? Chairman Xi and Putin. They're buddying up. Russia, China. If we were trying to create in a lab the worst national security scenario over the long term for the U.S. It feels to me like a Russia-China alliance, a real one, not just sort of a general economic, oh, we're going to be buddies. A real one is pretty scary. What do you think?
Well, so when you look at it in terms of just basic grand strategy, real politic, you have to understand that in the world as currently constituted, there are essentially three great powers. There's China, Russia, and the United States. Now, in the Cold War, it was China, the Soviet Union, and the United States. And this is what, and that it was the Cold War. China goes communist in 1949. Then in the 1970s, there's all these secret meetings, the secret travels of Kissinger, and then, of course, the very public travel of Nixon to China that breaks up Russia-China, that brings China into the U.S.'s orbit, and that sets the stage for the eventual downfall of the Soviet Union. As the Austrians used to say, in a world of three, be two. And so What we've done essentially is the opposite of that. We've decided to throw all that grand strategy out the window. We've decided to throw common sense out of the window and decide that in a world of three great powers, that we were going to drive both of them into each other's arms at the same time. Because when you consider it from the standpoint of any U.S. diplomat, your goal should always be to try to isolate Russia and then isolate China so that they specifically do not ever do what just happened this week.
What do you think about the Biden administration policy in Ukraine up to this point?
Well, so I think what they've done essentially, and not just in Ukraine, but also in their this idea of their interactions with Russia. Remember, complete refusal of negotiations, complete refusal to have one-on-one talks. It seems like they're not even phone calls going on between the Kremlin and the White House right now. Think of Reagan, right? Reagan would be meeting with Soviet leaders even during the invasion of Afghanistan. So he always kept that door open and had this sort of two-track policy where, okay, you can point out that the United States was certainly funding elements of the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, but also he was still meeting with Soviet leaders. He was still opening up this diplomatic side. Now we've decided to completely eschew any diplomatic negotiations whatsoever. You've got people that are just absolute radicals like Victoria Nuland and Tony Blinken, who just does whatever she says. I mean, he's basically her clerk at the end of the day. Wow. And who say that Russia has to give back Crimea and the Donbass and the Kremlin needs to be reduced to ash and all of the, you know, Putin has to step down and all this stuff. It's just not going to happen. It's literally just not going to happen. And then they've completely decided to forget about having any strategy other than simply thinking that it's 1992 again, and the United States can just dominate the world and tell everybody what they want, like we did in the Gulf War, and we did during this, you know, Pax Americana, the end of history that Fukuyama told us about, the peace dividend. And unfortunately, we're not there anymore. And you can talk about the millions of reasons why the rise of China, the relative decrease in American influence, et cetera, the overabundance of U.S. power trying to fill the world with NATO, like our adventures in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, the list goes on. But essentially, the rest of the world has gotten to the point where they're kind of sick of it and they're kind of sick of us. And they realize that what China has offered now, what China's offering along with BRICS, and keep in mind that India and Brazil are also going along with this. They're quietly right now, but they're also going along in South Africa as well. They don't really have a choice. That Russia and China are saying we're offering an alternate to the Western system, not just the American system, but the Western system writ large. That includes Europe, the World Economic Forum, et cetera, where they say, we don't care what your values are. We don't care if you're dictators. We don't care who you execute on a regular basis. We just want access to resources. We want your basing rights. We want portage. We want to be able to sell our products in your country. And we want to make sure that all your rare earth minerals are coming to us. And you look, the Saudis and the Iranians, guess what? The Sunni and the Shia, Buck, have just signed a deal at the behest of Beijing. The Turks and the Syrians are signing a deal now for the first time in something like 8 years, probably a decade, actually, 10 years, where we've seen this, essentially Erdogan wanted Assad out of there. Now they're signing a deal. Israel is just kind of forgotten about. Israel, the Abraham Accords are just completely gone. The Yemenis and the Houthis, it looks like that's actually starting to quiet down. The Egyptians are getting involved, we're hearing, all throughout Africa. They're meeting with China and Russia, and even in South America as well. So we've seen this with Obrador in Mexico and also in Brazil with their new leader, so with Lula. And so the United States really has to understand what's happening here. Plus, what's interesting to me is to look at the role of Russia in this, because we've forced Russia into this alliance with China. But also, Russia's been forced to be there as the junior partner because they no longer have access to Western capital markets. They no longer have access, obviously, to Europe to sell their gas, because obviously that pipeline is now resting at the bottom of the Baltic Sea. I wonder who put it there. And they've basically severed their entire ties with the West. And so what you're seeing now is this massive balance of economic, geopolitical, and military power that is shifting to this new Eastern alliance. And there's an obvious fault line right there for Russia, where we could, as U.S. diplomats, you could easily say, do you really want to be the junior partner to China? Do you really want to be subservient to Beijing? Because we could offer you an off-ramp if we can at least get these things shut down in Ukraine. But of course, no one in the U.S. is actually thinking that way.
What do you think a sensible end to the war in Ukraine would look like? What would have to get done for us to be at that place?
Well, I think a sensible end is to understand that, and I say this with my Navy intel hat on, that clearly Crimea is a red line for the Russians, for Putin. There, it's the home port of their Black Sea fleet. It's their main base, Sevastopol. They're not going to give that up. As far as specific territory in the Donbass or this land bridge that they've built, I feel like that's negotiable. Obviously, a ceasefire would be the first thing, the armistice to be signed. And we're also, by the way, we're hearing noise out of the Kremlin saying that they want that. And remember, it's the Biden administration right now that's rejecting it. They're saying, oh, this would be peace on Russia's terms. This would be co-opting what they've done. This would be, what do they say, parroting Russian propaganda, freezing the gains in. Well, guess what? The situation on the ground is the situation at the ground. But essentially, what the U.S. would have to do is more than likely drop NATO membership for Ukraine, this proposal. That's obviously their biggest red line for Russia. That's why they went in. They keep saying it over and over. But number two, there would more than likely be some kind of international, and this is what China wants, by the way, as well. They've also agreed to this. They want some kind of international peace deal for whatever's left of Ukraine right now. And then in addition, hammer out what exactly the economic agreement is going to be between Ukraine and Europe. So there's going to be one, maybe it's EU membership or some kind of, observer status in the EU where they get access to Schengen, that type of thing, but not necessarily full NATO membership without NATO bases inside European borders, which of course is very, very upsetting to the Kremlin. I feel like all of that could be hammered out rather than us getting into, I don't know. I just watched the All Quiet on the Western Front the other day.
Very good movie.
Fantastic. So fantastic. And I've read the book years ago. But they point out that for 4 years, those trenches, you had millions of people were being killed over, a football field's worth of territory in some cases, or a couple of football fields. We could save ourselves a lot of the trouble and save a lot of lives, a lot of people's sons and daughters, and God forbid everyone else who's caught up in this conflict, by just skipping to the end right now. And I think that makes sense from a moral standpoint and certainly from a United States diplomatic standpoint.
Jack, I want to ask you about how this affects Chinese calculations with regard to Taiwan in just a moment, and also talk to you a bit about 2024 and politics here at home. But first up, the recent bank failures you saw are the largest since the financial collapse back in 2008. So if you've been on the fence about buying gold and silver, now is the time to make the call. Gold and silver can be a protection for your portfolio, but can also be used as currency, and you could need it as that one day. You never know. Why not have a little gold and silver on hand just in case to protect your portfolio? Now is the time to call the Oxford Gold Group and hear what they have to say. The phone call is free. Securing your IRA or 401k with real gold and silver is a portfolio protection plan, and the Oxford Gold Group has made it as easy as 1, 2, 3. It's just so straightforward. You just decide that you're going to go for it, and you can get precious metals sent right to your home. That's it. Now you own real precious metals like I do. Mine came from the Oxford Gold Group. Yours should too. Call them now. Oxford Gold Group. Ask about free bonus opportunities you could be eligible for as well. Call 833-404-GOLD, 833-404-G-O-L-D. All right, Mr. Posobiec, tell me more about China and Taiwan and how Russia-Ukraine does or does not factor into the timeline and decision-making there.
Well, it certainly factors in. And you have to say that with Russia, or I should say with Beijing, with China, and of course, Xi Jinping is more than happy to go to Moscow to give Putin all the face that he needs, because that's what Putin needs, right? He needs this credibility on the world stage. He needs an answer to everyone looking out there saying, okay, what's to become of Russia? It's this huge wild card. Xi Jinping goes in and gives him all the credibility in the world. What does this mean? That he's now beholden to Xi. He now owes that all to Xi Jinping. So you've got Russia on your side. The calculation of what does China need to fuel their massive growth? They need gas. They need oil. And guess what is directly south of those massive gas deposits in far eastern Siberia is Beijing. It's right there. And so they've of course signed a deal for pipelines. They're going to be building nuclear plants, atomic plants. They're going to be doing everything. As it comes to the degree of control when you look at Taiwan, vis-a-vis Taiwan. So China's pursuing an interesting strategy where Russia, you could say, is pursuing the Mackinder world island strategy for this dominance of Central Asia, this dominance of the heartland theory, whereas China, they are focusing more and more on Mahan, the influence of sea power on world history. And so Mahan focuses specifically on the strategic sea lines of communication, aka choke points. Whereas China focused on in the Western Hemisphere, of course, the Panama Canal, and then we're also hearing Tierra del Fuego, which is the strait between Argentina and Antarctica, because they know that the flow of trade, the flow of the economy is determinate on these choke points. Where they focused on in the Middle East, well, it's very obvious. The Suez Canal, the Strait of Hormuz, right between essentially the Arab Peninsula and Iran. Now we come to Asia. That's the Strait of Malacca. So that gives you Singapore. And then what's the most other important, the last piece for all of Asia, the very last strait that they would need to control, of course, is the Taiwan Strait. So this is part of China's grand strategy of building the One Belt, One Road, aka the New Silk Road over land, that's through Central Asia to Europe, and then the Maritime Silk Road. That includes all of those choke points that I just outlined. So the Taiwan Strait is key to China's strategy. These maritime shipping routes, because I hear people talk about the issue of Taiwan and obviously the political history of it being the former government of China, the Republic of China, of all of the mainland, now, you know, in exile on Taiwan Island. Beijing considers them a rogue province. They're sort of a de facto country on their own because they're self-governing. They claim legitimacy over the rest of China, et cetera, et cetera. The calculus for them, though, is can they control the maritime shipping routes on the inside of the Taiwan Strait and to the outside of the Taiwan Strait? And as long as they can control those, Buck, I don't necessarily think that you're going to see a Chinese invasion or even a naval blockade of Taiwan, unless, of course, the United States eggs them on or Taiwan moves for some kind of formal declaration of independence on their own, a declaration of independence as a sovereign nation. If you see those, then of course, I think you will see China first. I think it would be a military blockade. A naval blockade would be the most obvious move by China. They've actually done it. They did it just about 12 months ago when they held live fire exercises all around the island. And also, it would be very expensive, right? So you're talking about huge sea lift, even though it's very close, you've got it. That's an amphibious assault. That's an amphibious invasion. You're talking, I mean, think of Normandy, the price of Normandy, and how hard that was even back in the 1940s for the United States to conduct. You're talking about the same exact issue against a fortified position. It's not going to be easy for them. That being said, a blockade, starve them out, not allow United States to resupply, not allow United States U.S. weapons to get in. That would obviously be a huge, huge win for the Chinese Communist Party and a very easy operation for the People's Liberation Army Navy to be able to conduct. So I think that right now, the signals that we're seeing out of Beijing seem to be that they want to go back to this longer, slower process of pushing for Taiwan to be absorbed into China, which is the same type of process that they were using for Hong Kong right up until the protests really kicked off. And when those protests kicked off in 2019, that's when you saw the national security law come in from Xi Jinping. That's when you saw the freedom leaders and democracy leaders being rounded up. And of course, we all know that just a few months later, COVID-19 seemed to just make all those protests disappear because everyone was forced to lock down and the leaders themselves also disappeared. So they would prefer very much to use that low and slow process because, of course, the Chinese plan things out in terms of generations. They're not like the U.S. where we think of election cycles. They don't have election cycles, right? And Xi Jinping, of course, is firmly in control of the party. And I've heard some other, you know, kind of China watchers say, oh, Xi is threatened. He's vulnerable. No, he's really not. He's taken their Elon Musk, essentially, Jack Ma, and they locked him up for nearly half a year because he went off the playbook. This is not a guy who feels threats internally. The only thing that he's going to respond to, because you look at it, he's got the United States in his pocket. He's got the World Economic Forum in his pocket. He's got Joe Biden in the White House. And now he's got Vladimir Putin, who owes him a massive favor. He's holding a lot of cards right now, Buck.
That's all true. Jack, I want to talk to you about 2024. Do you have your guy yet, or gal, could be, or are you waiting to see how this plays out in the primary? I want to discuss that with you in just a moment. But first, born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been honoring America's heroes ever since. The foundation honors fallen and severely injured heroes and their families with mortgage-free smart homes. This year alone, hundreds of Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children and our nation's most severely injured veterans and first responders are receiving homes. More than 500 homeless veterans received housing and services last year, and more than 1,500 are receiving housing and services this year. This coming Memorial Day, all of the brave men and women lost since 9/11 in the War on Terror are having their names read aloud in a Tunnel to Towers ceremony in our nation's capital. Through the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute, the foundation is educating kids in kindergarten through 12th grade about our nation's darkest day. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Please help America to never forget its greatest heroes. Join me in donating $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. All right, Jack, 2024, who are going to be the nominees? Who's going to win and why?
2024. Well, I mean, I would have said this 6 months ago, but I think you've really seen it this week that it President Trump seems to be in the driver's seat. He's got a lot of gas behind him right now. Obviously, all this stuff out of New York, out of Georgia, out of D.C., these potential indictments. I think there was a miscalculation on the behalf of the Democrats and Merrick Garland, who I by the way, it's very clear that Merrick Garland is behind what's going on in Manhattan and Georgia as well. I don't know if he's offered these guys some, you know, positions. Oh, Alvin Bragg, I'm going to nominate you as the assistant U.S. whatever in the DOJ after this. But, you know, he's falling flat on his face. But it's done the opposite because it's done is show, I think, the whole world that Trump was telling the truth about the deep state, that they really were out to get him, that what Amanda Milius and Lee Smith and everybody pointed out, that this plot against the president was real. There was, as crazy as it sounds, a conspiracy to get him out of office. And now there's a preemptive coup going on to try to stop him from returning to office. And I think the American people, I think they really miscalculated. There used to be a time in this country, you know, back in the 1990s, where the media kind of set the table, where media really set public opinion in this country. And if there was a headline in the New York Times, a headline in the Wall Street Journal, it was done. People just went with that. And that really, you know, you can talk about the Iraq War and the lead up to that, where that was kind of the last hurrah of that era. But it's not like that anymore, because suddenly if they announce charges on President Trump, I think people's more initial response to that is going to be, you know, something like, that's BS. Why are they trying to stop this guy? Because there's so little trust in the system right now. There's so little trust in the media. There's so little trust in these institutions, certainly so little trust in the federal government, that all it does is help him and actually burnish his credentials. And so I would have said it 6 months ago. I'd say it now. I think the nomination is Trump's. Obviously, he's seeking that. I don't see anybody out there on the playing field that can really challenge him. I think that if you saw when he went to East Palestine and met with the families there, that it just seemed to me that he's got this emotional resonance with voters, particularly in the Midwest, in the South, in the upper Midwest, that I don't see any other politician in America really breaking right now. I just don't.
And how does he stack up against Joe Biden? I think we can pretty safely assume it will be Joe Biden running for re-election, although it's not 100%. But
well, they will
Trump...
take. Go ahead. They will put Biden. They will put a stick under that guy's, you know,
yes,
coat jacket and prop him
I
up
agree.
Like Weekend at Bernie's if they have to.
Yeah, they will. So let's assume it's Trump Biden 2024.
I would assume it's
How
Trump
does that
Biden.
Go?
I think it actually goes in Trump's favor, and here's why. Because people can talk about the brashness of President Trump, but you know what? He can also point to two things that nobody else can. 4 years of peace and 4 years of prosperity. That America was rich, the economy was booming for 4 years, and we weren't embarking on these new world wars. There was no proxy war in Ukraine. Tanks weren't rolling into Kiev. These horrible images that we're seeing out of everywhere. China and Russia weren't forming these alliances together. It seemed like he was kind of keeping a lot of these things in check. And oh, by the way, radical Islam. I mean, Buck, when's the last time you even said the phrase radical Islam?
Been a long time.
He wiped them out. He completely went from 2002 to 2016. It was our lead issue in like all of politics. And now it's just gone, completely wiped out in one term. And I think that because Biden's term in office has been so abysmal, that things have gotten so crazy, the economy's in free fall, we have this massive bank collapse, as you just mentioned. World affairs seem like they're completely falling out of control. It's essentially, you're looking at the second term of Jimmy Carter here. And I think if he frames it that way and says, look, I've got the record to beat this guy, plus you've got these indictments, I think he's going to win.
What do you think about DeSantis' chances against him in the primary?
You know, I think DeSantis is a strong governor. I think he's a great, I wish we had 50 Ron DeSantis's running all 50 states, to be honest. I think, though, that he still just started his second term as governor. And I think it makes, I think more people are looking for him to stack those W's in the primary. And that being said, I would throw out this. I don't think he'd be successful against Trump in a primary, but, and I've said this publicly a few times already, I do think that he would be President Trump's strongest running mate right now. When you just look at it in terms of the political process, who are those voters that Trump needs to win back? Who are those voters that Trump needs to make inroads in? That is the suburbs. Trump's got the base. He's got the primary on lock. But in the general, he could really be helped by somebody like a DeSantis to go to those voters and say, look, you know, this is about operations. This is about policy. This isn't about, you know, mean tweets. You know, people have issues with that. I think it's honestly something that would be his best possible pick, at least right now. And then because Trump, think of it, he's term limited to just one more term. So he goes in. And that sets up DeSantis essentially to have an 8-year period. So it's not just 4 years. It's actually a 12-year, you know, stretch of just absolute conservative dominance at the White House, which we have seen before if you look at Reagan Bush.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of
bit.
Us.
We're
a
figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days,
it would have been juicy.
Would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. On Purpose is dedicated to helping you be happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how he got comfortable with fear, navigating the changes in relationships, and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern. This conversation shows a never-seen-before side to Orlando Bloom and his unique life journey.
I think we all struggle sometimes to really deeply believe that we are enough, that we're valued, that we're valuable. You know, we're imprinted by our parents from the age of 0 to 7, right? Mm. I'm constantly trying to go, like, how do I detach from this idea of, is that my baggage? It doesn't look like my baggage. I mean, I know, okay, that's mine. Let's unpack that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for Smart Money Happy Hour. Pull up a chair. It's the happy hour you wish your friends were having.
Mix two money experts with some hot takes and a splash of nostalgia, and you get me, George Camel.
And me, Rachel Cruz, talking unfiltered about what's going on in the world, pop culture, and how to afford a life you love.
We're talking money, celebrity budgets, and my budget for my two French bulldogs. It's a lot.
You'll hear it all on Smart Money Happy Hour. Listen on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Would you be willing to help broker a discussion between Trump team and DeSantis team to see if that would even be a possibility?
More than happy to. Hey, they're in the same state. That actually would be, interestingly enough, one of the biggest, other than obviously all the personality issues aside, keep in mind that Reagan and Bush back in 1980, that was another shotgun marriage that was made at the convention. There was a bitter primary fight that was put between George Bush Sr. and Ronald Reagan, who then went on to become his vice president and then, of course, president after him. But sort of was an 8 years and 4 years. This would be a 4 years and 8 years. And so it's not to say that it hasn't happened before, but also that there is a constitutional question of them both being residents of the same state that would have to be dealt with.
Yeah, it's interesting because I see people, this is one of those things where you'll say there's a misconception that they can't be from the same state. You know, if you just look this up. And then people will say, actually, they can't be from the same state. And you sit here and you say, okay, everyone's got to come together and agree.
As far as I can tell, it's never been challenged. Yeah. So it is one of those things that would probably go to the Supreme Court.
This
and it would depend on how the
Article
Supreme Court
2
rules.
States the electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for two persons of whom at least one shall not be an inhabitant of the state with themselves. And it says here, on the original system, electors did not distinguish between candidates in the nation's top two offices. The candidate with the most votes became president. The runner-up became vice president. We all know that. The 12th Amendment, adopted in 1804 after two chaotic elections, mandated their electors cast separate ballots for president and vice president. However, the rule preventing an elector from voting for two people from his home state remained in effect under the new system. Which one is it?
It's very confusing. And obviously the way around it would be
sounds like
simply
you can't. I'm reading from history.com and it sounds like, wait, but then they say there are misconceptions. There's no law or regulation against a president and vice president being from the same state. So interesting. Anyway, go ahead.
The easiest way around it would just be for Trump to, he could easily switch his residence back to New York.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mr. President. There would be some more taxes. But it's like, well, they're already trying to, what are they going to do? Try to prosecute you? Oh, wait.
That's true. So what's the worst thing that could happen other than the taxes?
Yeah, what's
plus
the worst that could happen?
Already lost a fair amount of money, you know, from running, I mean, and a bunch of other
things. I think that challenge is easily dealt with. I think it's dealt with. And quite frankly, I think the Supreme Court looking at it, because keep in mind that the Supreme Court that we have right now, kind of the Thomas Court, is constituted. They're very much originalists and they're focused on original intent when it comes to constitutional questions like this. Well, the issue there that they were trying to deal with in those initial unruly elections was that it came down to the second highest vote getter would be the vice president. And so the issue they were dealing with was who would become president. That was the reason for the rule in the first place. Well, if you're running as a combined ticket, obviously that wouldn't be an issue anymore.
Right, right. I mean, here they're saying, by the way, they say that it's kind of, the whole thing is silly. Like Cheney, for example, this is why, even if it was an issue, it's not an issue, to your point. I've actually looked at the bottom of the analysis here because Cheney had been living in the 2000 election. Cheney had been living and paying taxes in Texas for 5 years. He just changed his residency to Wyoming. Boom. Done.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. I don't think it would be that hard, which gets you out of the constitutional question. But even if you brought it to the court, I can't imagine the court would.
Are you optimistic, Jack? I mean, do you think things are going to get better in the country? What makes Jack Posobiec think that? What makes Agent Poso think we're all going to be okay?
I'm kind of a white-pilled guy on that. You know, I do tend to think of myself as hopeful. I pray every morning. I do a rosary every morning. And we do it with the family. And I actually think that when I look around at the world and I see how crazy things are, but I also think that I have hope in the American people. And when I say that, what I mean is you get to a point where things get so bad, where things get so crazy when things get so completely out of control, when there's Chinese spy balloons flying across our military bases and U.S. Drones getting struck down in the Black Sea, when we even try to take a peek at what's going on in Ukraine. By the way, that is how you're supposed to deal with the drone. You shoot it out of the sky, right? Rather than let it fly over your bases. Just a point of military strategy out there for everybody. That people get sick of it. That I think that people know that Biden generally looks weak on the world stage. Our economy is in absolute free fall. I think that this news about a potential Trump arrest was leaked because everyone was freaking out about the banking crisis. And I think the American people realize that, you know what, there may have been some mean tweets and there may have been a bad orange man in the White House, but everyone's lives were a little bit better when that was going on. And so, you know what, it's worth it.
Jack Posobiec, everybody. Jack, where can people go to follow your latest other than on Twitter, where you are prolific?
Yeah. Way too many tweets up there. The best, honestly, if you want Poso in small, quick, concise doses, Human Events Daily. We do the podcast every day. It's 25 minutes or less, because when I was in the Navy, they used to tell us the mark of a good briefer was to be good, be brief, be gone. And so that is our promise, our oath, and our solemn vow to our listeners every day.
I remember in the CIA, we had to do elevator briefs all the time because they basically just prepared us for the notion that important people were going to say, all right, get in the elevator with me. Tell me what I need to know. And I was always like,
100%.
But I was always like, is the elevator like, is this a skiff? Probably not. But we're supposed to pretend that all those rules, Jack, as you know, are adhered to to the letter all the time.
Totally. I've never had conversations like that in the P-Way. No.
Other than, Joe Biden, who has classified stuff hanging out next to the Corvette in his garage. Anyway, everybody, Jack Posobiec, go follow him. Go check out Human Events Daily. And Mr. Jack, great to have you. We'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, Buck. Thank you, man.
Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.